Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
I believe united we stand, and we have common ground to find, and we're going to find it. We're not going to
I'm J.R. Ross.
And I'm Scott Bauer.
Welcome to Rewind, the look at this week in the Capitol from Wisconsin and WisPolitics.com. But first, Wis, I was there. Since we missed last week's show, we're going to dip back into last week a little bit, some video. Governor Evers talking about the controversy over who's going to represent the state in lawsuits and have oversight of those lawsuit settlements. Testimony from various assembly committees. Dems introducing a farm bill. Testimony about drunk driving legislation. And finally, a little bickering about job creation from the Joint Finance Committee. Wis, I was there.
We're in a position where everybody's buying lawyers and hiring staff to solve a problem that should have never occurred. And by God, we have a lawyer. His name is Josh Call, Attorney General. He should have had the authority all along to be able to do this.
Nitrate is most commonly found contaminate in Wisconsin's groundwater in all of our 72 counties. It is estimated about one-third of well owners have never tested for it. The national maximum contaminated level for nitrate is 10 parts per million. Under this bill, private well owners can contact a local health department to have nitrate levels tested for the well. The local health department will then collect the sample, submit that to a state-certified laboratory, report the results to the Wisconsin Department of Health Services, DHS.
To continue Wisconsin's strong tradition of farmers that feed our state and beyond, we must recruit and retain the next generation of beginning farmers. The Beginning Farmer Student Loan Assistance Program is modeled on a successful program in New York and would provide student debt reimbursement for those who commit to managing a farm or a component of a farm in Wisconsin for at least 5 years.
Getting behind the wheel of a vehicle after consuming an intoxicating beverage or after consuming drugs is a choice. And far too many individuals feel that OWI isn't that big of a deal. It's a culture. We need to change that culture that is dangerous. I, for one, am tired of standing over the top of cars that are a mangled wreck with a dead body in it.
We fell from 11th in the nation in job creation to 39th at the end of 2018. Our wage growth is half the national average. We're top 10 of the states for losing an educated workforce. Remedy your abysmal job creation record, your abysmal record on wages, your abysmal record on retaining the educated workforce that we need to, your abysmal record on attracting young people, and let the agencies do their jobs.
The budget that was submitted by this administration was fiscally irresponsible. There's 100,000 open jobs in the state of Wisconsin. What did the governor do? He cut money for workforce development. He cut money to attract people to the state of Wisconsin to take these thousands of jobs. You're complaining about our being micromanaging? My gosh, the fiscal irresponsibility of this administration is abhorrent. You guys have no idea what it takes to create jobs. None.
So, Scott, let's talk about me being surprised twice in the span of like 9-10 days. So, Sean Duffy retires, announced he's going to resign, actually, September 23rd. And on the heels of that, we get Sensenbrenner's announcement. So, I guess I want to get your reaction first. Like, let's start with Sensenbrenner. Were you surprised by the news, and if so, why?
It's always surprising when a veteran member of Congress steps down. You know, I'm sure you had heard a lot of people have been talking about, there had been a lot of discussion, will this be the term that where he retires? And he's 76 and his wife is in failing health apparently. So there's a lot of things going on that led people to think he might be retiring. But, you know, actually hearing it when the guy's been there 40-some years is pretty surprising. And a lot of the folks we might talk about here who are thinking about running, some of them said, you know, that they were caught by surprise. So kind of the calculus of figuring out who's going to run is happening maybe a little bit sooner than folks thought it might.
Well, it's interesting. When I first started covering the Capitol, you know, Dave Obie and Sensenbrenner were like kind of like the deans, you know. And there was always this thought, and then Tom Petri too, this thought that Sensenbrenner would for sure try and eclipse Obie for longest serving House member of Wisconsin history. But as it got closer and closer to that, I was like, well, he's just going to stay because there's nothing else. I mean, he is Congress, right?
Right.
But also what I heard this week making calls is that, you know, Sensenbrenner is a person who doesn't raise a lot of money, but he does 100 town halls every year. Mm-hmm. He goes to all these church bazaars, the local brat fry, all these things. And as he's gotten older, he had a hip surgery, I think, over the winter, and it slowed him down. He can't mm-hmm. do his hallmark, which is these public events. So I don't think the passion is waning for doing it. It's the idea of he can't do what makes him Jen Sensenbrenner.
Yeah, and I don't know if you remember, JR, but at the Republican State Party Convention last May, he was the only person who spoke who had to come down in front of the stage for the podium, and I think that was just to shorten the distance he had to walk. You know, so that was kind of interesting and pointed toward, you know, some maybe the hip issue. So, yeah, I mean, there could be a variety of there are a variety of reasons why someone makes that decision. The guy will have been there 42 years next year.
Yeah.
So, you know, nothing to shake a stick at. but as we've all written about and talked about this week, you know, it's a once-in-a-generation potentially opportunity for Republicans in a heavily conservative district.
Yeah, and that district is what he cited for why he's leaving, because he wanted to have a young incumbent or a freshman incumbent in office when redistricting happens rather than a retiring veteran, because he feared that they would seize upon that to break up the district and not be as good for the fifth, which is, you know, deep red, Waukesha, those mm-hmm. suburbs, kind of goes north and west of Milwaukee. But as you said, once lifetime, that means that everybody on the Republican side who's looking to run thinks, if I win this primary, I'm kind of set for as long as I want to be. So Let's go through the list. I mean, I've got most conversations I had start with Scott Fitzgerald, Senate mm-hmm. Majority Leader, has on the seat for a long time. In 2011, when they drew the lines between the 5th and the 6th congressional districts, his brother, you might remember, Jeff Fitzgerald, was a speaker, mm-hmm. lives in Horicon. Scott's in Juneau. The line goes like this, between the 5th and the 6th, and then dips at Horicon and comes back up. It keeps them two separate congressional districts. That may have been on purpose, I'm not sure. But so Fitzgerald's been a long-time candidate for this, possibly. Leah Vukmir ran for Senate last year. Kevin Nicholson ran for Senate last year is on my list. Paul Farrell, Waukesha County Executive, is on my list. There are several lawmakers. Chris Kappingen says he'll look at it. Mm-hmm. Adam Nalen, state rep, says he'll look at it. People are watching to see what Dale Kayenga, if he decides to get in. Now we have Matt Walker, talking about possibly running. Mm-hmm. Ben Volkel, who's an aide to Ron Johnson. I think I've got everybody who's publicly said one way or another, I'm thinking about it.
I think it might be easier to name the people in that district who are not running or thinking about it.
But let's start with Fitz. I mean, where do you place Fitz in the pecking order, I guess, for this primary so far?
We're going to talk about the Marquette poll later on. Yeah. But it had an interesting question in there about do you know Scott Fitzgerald? And granted, this is a statewide poll, and it was like 50% had never heard of the guy. Obviously, the name recognition is going to be higher within that district. But he has never run for anything beyond state senate before. Leah Vukmir just last November was in a statewide general election and a statewide primary. That is her base. Mm-hmm. You know, that congressional district, one would think that she would do very well there. Fitzgerald, though, is super connected, majority leader, fundraising, you know, all the things you need to have to be a successful congressional candidate. From all indications, it seems like he's likely to get in the race. And, you know, he'd be a formidable candidate. Him getting in does to other lawmakers who are thinking about getting in? Does that freeze out Kuyenga? Does that freeze out Kappinga? What does it do to Nealon? You know, all these guys, I think that'll be a really interesting dynamic, because one of the things Sensenbrenner said on his way announcing this is that he did not want a bad, tough, you know, infighting primary. Seems really hard to imagine that not happening.
So now, his drawback is he's not from the voter-rich part of the district. So, I mean, really, you know, it's northern Waukesha County, so you got your Waukeshas and those kinds of areas. He's from kind of the northwest corner, not as populated. So, yeah, he's well-known in Republican circles, but he's not like Leah, who represented that area when she was in the Assembly in the Senate. Same time, you know, this is going to be a talk radio primary, people tell me. So whoever can kind of capture the imagination of your Jay Webbers, Mark Bellings, on down the list, Mickey McKenna's, that might be a boost for you. I've also kind of heard with, like, Farrow, you know, Farrow and Vukmir are kind of close. So if Vukmir gets in, I don't think Farrow does. And the impression I've gotten too many conversations is that Farrell's got his eye on governor in 2022. That's more like where he might end up.
Yeah, and I talked to Paul Farrell yesterday, I think, and you know, he was very quick to praise both Leah Vukmir and Scott Fitzgerald, which was interesting coming from him, and kind of it feeds into that narrative of maybe he's not, you know, this race isn't really where he's looking. And there are a number of other Republicans who live in that congressional district who are not putting their names out there, like Rebecca Clayfish, because she's looking ahead to the governor's race.
Absolutely.
I mean, there are a lot of – and Kevin Nicholson, everyone is kind of thinking that he might want to run again for U.S. Senate. So does he really run for Congress if that's what he wants to do in 2022? There are a lot of dominoes to fall in this whole thing.
Yeah. Well, Nicholson, it seems like the buzz I got was that if you were to win this seat, you can't win a seat for Congress and then turn around a couple months later and start running for the U.S. Senate. Mm-hmm. So that would be a take him off the board for 2022, which people I talk to think that he has his eye on that. Oh, by the way, don't forget the place he did most poorly in the primary last year against Leah Vukmir for the GOP U.S. Senate nomination was in this part of the state.
Yeah,
really had a hard time with talk radio at times, so that would be maybe a drawback for him. Capping a nail, you said, got to figure out, is Fitzgerald going to freeze those guys out? With Ben Volkel, it's like he's an aide to Ron Johnson. It's hard to go from aide to candidate for Congress against an experienced field. Same thing for Matt Walker. I mean, you're looking at saying, okay, how do you make this jump?
I mean, the thing that's interesting, a couple things that are interesting about Matt Walker and Ben Volkel, they're both young.
Yes.
Matt's 25, I believe. I think Ben's 32. They would definitely, as far as I know, be the two youngest who are looking at this. I think Nealon's in his 30s, too, upper 30s. But more for Ben than Matt is where does the money come from? You know, Matt Walker, I think, would be able to tap into some Walker loyalists and the Walker brand. But for Ben, that's going to be a real challenge, especially when you're running against people like Leah Vukmir and Scott Fitzgerald, who would have established, you know, connections with a lot of people who can cut a lot of big checks.
Yeah, and now, for viewers at home, we're talking about Republicans for a simple reason. It's a Republican district.
Right.
I think Sensenbrenner won it every time with at least 60%. So the guy who went against Sensenbrenner last time got 30% of the vote, and he's already announced he's going to run, but the focus is on the Republican side because barring a complete collapse with the Republican Party in 2020, that the whole primary is the deal for that.
Yeah, it's a comparable district to, say, Mark Pocan's district here in Dane County. There's not a lot of talk about Republicans.
Yeah, so let's look at the 7th now. So that one's a little bit older. Still a shock that Sean Duffy would resign September 23rd, I think is a date, but talked about how the baby has due in October, has a heart defect, and that he needs to be with his family. So now that's also a different situation because now you have a special election to fill his seat, date to be determined. The Republican side, I have, State Senator Tom Tiffany, State Senator Jerry Petrosky, conservative activist Luke Hilgeman, State Rep Romaine Quinn. On the Democratic side, I've talked to, State Senator Janet Buley, State Rep Nick Milroy, former State Senator Pat Kreitlow, lawyer Christine Bremer. So there are people who are talking about it. The thing that I'm watching is when push comes to shove, who gets in?
Yeah, and they're on a much tighter time frame, obviously, than the 5th CD, although everyone's kind of got to, you know, stake their ground. But we're going to have a special election potentially in February, a primary in a general in April, maybe. As you said, that those dates have not been set yet. So these folks have to decide pretty quickly. I wouldn't be surprised if we have candidates making their intentions known publicly within days.
Yeah. So now with that one, the dynamic I'm watching is when's the election going to be? And I've heard three options for the governor. One is, okay, there's already a spring election, February primary, April general. And if you're a Democrat, you want your best shot to win what is a pretty Republican seat. I think Trump won it by 20 points, give or take a few in 16. Your best shot is when you have the most Democratic turnout. Well, having a primary for president on the ballot in April of 2020 with it unlikely being a Republican primary going on was any of your best hope. But that's in a vacuum. If you also have that special election, that date, you could bring out more Republicans you'd have normally, which then would impact the state Supreme Court race. And if you're Tony Evers, do you want to worry about a congressional district you could win but maybe not hold more than 6 months versus a state Supreme Court seat that could be a 10-year term? So there's that factor. You could have two whole new elections, even yet this year. I think you still squeeze it in before Christmas if you really tried hard. But then you have taxpayers paying for two new elections. You're hoping then that it'd be energy and enthusiasm that your side would be greater than the other, or a hybrid model where you go primary in January, generals in February, and they're only scheduled February primary for the spring election, and that way you have one new election. So I'm not sure which one he's going to pick. But those are the theories that I've heard so far. Does that match with what you've heard?
Yeah, it does. And I asked the governor about this last week or the week before, and he was noncommittal, although he did say that he wanted to do what made sense for the district. Mark Pocan was a little more out front and said what makes sense for the district is to have it in February and April, and didn't seem to be too concerned about the implications on that Supreme Court race. So, you know, it's going to be one of those where it's going to be here quickly, no matter what he chooses. And I think it's important, as you said, that point about whoever wins is only in there for sure for the rest of next year. And they're going to be running again in November, and November is a presidential election. And so the whole dynamic is going to be different in this special.
And I think the national folks have a different perspective, congressional folks have a different perspective than state folks, because in their minds, this is a district that Trump has to win, not just to win in Wisconsin, but nationally. Mm-hmm. If Democrats win or come close, that is a huge blow for the president to go, okay, this is my base, these are my people, mm-hmm. and they're not turning out. So for those folks, maybe that's what they're worried about, versus the state folks going, well,
here's a word you're going to hear a lot, bellwether.
Yes, you will. So speaking of elections, all right, MU Law School poll, first one since April. So let's start the presidential race, because that's really what people want, because we are the eye of the storm, right? Mm-hmm. So head-to-head presidential election, Joe Biden 51, Trump 42, Bernie Sanders 48, Trump 44, Trump 45, Warren 45, Trump 44, Harris 44. What those numbers mean to you at this point?
I mean, I think we need to take what pollster Charles Franklin said to heart on these numbers. It's very early. The don't knows are very high on the lesser known candidates. And really what this seems to be is a reflection of name ID on the Democratic side. And it needs to be taken, I believe, with a tremendous grain of salt where we are right now. I think the quote Franklin had was, we're in the second inning of the ballgame. You know, it provides you a glimpse of where things are in the second inning, but there's a lot of baseball yet to be played. And as candidates come and go and become more well-known, these numbers are going to change significantly. And I think they largely mirror national numbers, what you're seeing, Biden, Sanders, Warren, you know, kind of in that order. And the other point is, you know, with any poll, it's a snapshot in time. It is not a predictor of what may happen in the election. So I think sometimes people view these polls as something other than what they are. It tells you kind of where Democrats and people are feeling in the state right now. But I think there are some other points we'll talk about maybe later that might be a little more, I think, significant than kind of these head-to-head matchups at this date.
Let's hear from Charles Franklin right now. He talked kind of about that, the unknown in that primary right now. Here's some video of Charles Franklin talking after the poll presentation this past week.
I do think that the 13% that say they don't know who they would support, and the very high percentage of people that say they don't have an opinion of even Warren or Harris or Buttigieg, is a strong indication that there's room for movement in the primary. It could come at the top of the primary or down towards the bottom of the primary. We're still at a stage where a lot of voters haven't really tuned in and gotten to know all of their choices.
All right, so to get to those Dem primary numbers, so we have Biden 28. So for first choice, Biden 28, Sanders 20, Elizabeth Warren 17, Mayor Pete 6, Kamala Harris 3. Your second choice of these people asked this question, Warren 20, Biden 18, Sanders 13, Harris 11, Mayor Pete 10. You kind of mentioned that this is because name ID. One thing I asked folks about this week, well, what's going on here? Because Sanders won 71 of 72 counties just 3 years ago in Wisconsin's primary. I got a couple of answers. One, every poll I've covered, people are going to pick apart the methodology. What Charles Franklin did was he said, okay, every self-identified Democrat is going to be asked a question of the primary. Every independent who leans Democratic is going to be asked, and every pure independent. Is that going to be the makeup of the primary on April, whatever it is? Probably not, but we have an open primary system, so you kind of have to do that. Two, I heard a parallel to the Tony Evers primary for governor last year, right? Older guy who's been around, has name ID, starts out ahead right away, and the challenge for everybody is, can you come take it from, you have younger, possibly more progressive candidates, other than Bernie Sanders, a little bit about the same age, can they come take it from him? between now and sometime next spring. Does that jive what you think?
Yeah, I think that's a good assessment. I mean, I think you can't understate how important name ID is here 14 months out. And the poll gets into that on some of the other candidates in terms of their recognizability to the voters. You know, most people, they're only paying attention to this on a very high level. You talk to regular Democratic voters, and they're like, I'm just waiting for this field to shake out a little bit before I decide who I like. So in the meantime, yeah, I like Joe Biden. I know who Joe Biden is. Or Bernie Sanders. You know, Bernie, I voted for him, whatever. These other folks, they may recognize the name, but they don't know enough yet to say, like, that is my guy. So I think you're seeing a lot of that at this point in the game.
One thing or two was with Sanders is he was running a one-on-one versus Hillary Clinton in Wisconsin, you know, 3 years ago. Now you have more options who are just as progressive as he is. I mean, people credit Bernie for taking the party that direction, but just as progressive options who have different backgrounds and maybe they're kind of looking at somebody different than what he's offered. And then two, of all those Democrats in the top kind of tier, the top three, Warren had the most room to grow. Mm-hmm. And they all were, you know, plus, I think Biden was plus 50 with Democrats. People asked the Dem primary question. Sanders like plus 42. Well, so was Warren, but she was only, a fourth of the voters in that, or a third have an opinion of her yet. So that means she has room to grow in that primary versus Biden and Sanders. Are kind of like, they're, you know, kind of well-known guys.
Yeah.
Now, other thing I got to mention, so President Trump, his numbers do not move a whole lot. Mm-hmm. This latest poll, 45% approve the job he's doing, 53% disapprove, is 46-52 in April. The president's calling card has been the economy so far, so he talks about constantly. And on that question alone, it was 49-50 for approval of the economy, but that's also what I think is the maybe the biggest vulnerability that he has in this poll from people I talked to, was that looking ahead, 26% say the economy is going to improve the next 12 months, 33% think it'll stay the same, and 37% say it'll get worse. Franklin said, if you look at this poll and the last two, it's the most pessimistic voters have been about the economy's future at any point in the Marquette poll history. Why is that important?
Well, as you said, I mean, he's going to live or die most likely on the economy. He's been staking a lot of his reelection argument on the strength of the economy up to this point. And there are, you know, when they were out in the field, there were a number of warning signs on the economy that came up that were probably reflected in people's pessimism here. And Democrats are going to be making the argument, that his policies on trade war and tariffs and all of that are having a negative impact on the economy. Democratic Congressman Ron Kine this week on the conference call with reporters said that he's never seen a president trying any harder to plunge the country into recession, which for Ron Kine is a pretty, interesting statement. So I think all of that is kind of in the mix here. And if people are feeling bad about the future, that's not a good thing when you're running for reelection.
Yeah. Now, I've got to make a side note of the poll numbers. So we live and breathe this stuff. In the poll, both U.S. senators in Wisconsin have a positive net rating, but 16% don't have an opinion of Tammy Baldwin, though she won re-election just 10 months ago by 10 points. And double that, don't have an opinion of Ron Johnson just 3 years out from his re-election.
For the political nerds, one of the most fun things to watch during the Marquette poll release is the frustration that Mike Gushay shows about that number on Ron Johnson. He can never believe how few people have an opinion of him. And it is rather shocking and disappointing, but it is what it is.
Franklin calls it the Senate cycle. You win, then you spend 5 years in obscurity before you run again and people forget about you.
Yeah.
All right, so this next topic, I have to ask you, there's a standoff between the Legislature's Budget Committee, Joint Finance Committee, and Department of Justice about settlements. I have to ask you, Scott, should anybody care about this at this point?
Well, it depends on, what level of interest you have in this stuff. I'll cut to the chase, okay? You will care, or you should care, because there are potentially millions of dollars in settlement fees, settlement money, court lawsuit settlements that the state of Wisconsin may or may not be able to get because of this standoff. The Department of Justice has identified, I think, 15 or so lawsuits where there are potential settlements pending, and that would require, under a law passed in the lame duck session, would require the Republican-controlled Joint Finance Committee to sign off on. What we have going on now is basically a disagreement over the process for that committee to sign off on these agreements. The Democratic Attorney General wants the lawmakers to sign a confidentiality agreement so he can go in there and lay out the terms of the settlements. Committee members on both sides, for different reasons, don't want to do that. They tried to broker some kind of compromise where the committee, the Republicans on the committee, hired a private attorney who would sign the agreement. Department of Justice says that's not good enough, and now we're nowhere, at least publicly. And so you should care because the state could lose out on millions of dollars. And at some point, as I think Governor Evers said, adults need to come together and figure out a solution to this and work it out. But where we stand right now, there is no clear path forward.
I cover politics for insiders, total inside baseball. This is inside as it gets. Mm-hmm. But there doesn't have any fireworks about this. We have some video from Joint Finance. It was all set up because in the lame duck session back in December, Republicans passed a law requiring them to have oversight, but didn't put a process in place in that bill to lay out how it happens, and now we're at here. Let's watch the video.
The legal problem you were creating with these dirty duck laws in this settlement provision. Attorneys have a legal, ethical duty of confidence. We cannot violate, the Attorney General cannot violate that. And yet, in your lame duck laws, you require him to come before us and get our agreement to settle cases. Unprecedented. Never before in the history of the state have we required Attorney General to do that. Most states do not require that, by the way. This mess was created by my Republican colleagues.
The law that was passed in December of 2018 kind of changed the rules, right? I mean, can't change the law. Had there been any attempt to go back and have conversations regarding that settlement, to modify that settlement so that it actually fit parameters of the law that was legally passed by this body?
First of all, it's not a settlement. It's a common interest agreement, which are...
You work in a different world than I do. Yeah, I accept that.
Which are common in litigation. If your question is whether we asked for a Wisconsin-specific exemption to the agreement so that we could be treated differently from every other state, the answer is no.
There's been more discussion about this process today than ever before in the history of settlements in Wisconsin. So I think you're a little bit all wet on that argument about transparency, because if anything, this process helps the public understand it better, not worse. Clerk, call the roll.
All right, Scott, so we have a new CEO for the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, Missy Hughes. Mark Hogan, who was the holdover, remember Republicans passed a law giving giving them the power essentially to appoint the secretary until September 1st. Hogan left on Tuesday. We now have Missy Hughes. Her background, 15 years of general counsel with Organic Valley Crop Cooperative. She has degrees in political science and law. She worked as an attorney in Wyoming. She beat out some folks that include Elmer Moore Jr., Sam Rickers, Brian Tefora, Carrie Tomey, and Jamie Wall, former congressional candidate. So here's my question for you, Scott. What are her challenges?
Well, one of the big ones, obviously, is Foxconn. The deal signed by her predecessor, negotiated by her predecessor. What approach does she take toward that massive project? Is she friendly toward Foxconn? Is she combative? Does she throw up roadblocks? That's a big one. And then I think you had mentioned some issues about what emphasis does she put on startup companies in the state? Is that a focus? What will her focus be? What will be her pet project, so to say, as Wedick head? We don't know.
Dems constantly talk about how we're among the bottom in the country for startups. So will she be a venture capital type person looking to feed those businesses, which also they're also often risky businesses to invest in, and when Wedick's loans fail, it's bad press. So how does that work out for her? So now let's go to the West Politics stock report this week. I'm going to hit a couple quick topics for you. So one, our rising is Tony Evers. So back to Marquette poll. His net job approval rate is plus 20 points, increase of 10 points from in April. And now we live in the Madison Capital bubble, right? I mean, like, we've heard from Republicans that the Evers administration is stumbling. They don't do this right. You know, the budget fight, Republicans declared victory on the budget. Here's a guy who increased his job approval rating to a point where I think Scott Walker's best spread was plus 8 the whole time he was in office, and his best number was 52. He was at 54. Why? Why is he there? Do you have any idea, Bauer?
I think maybe voters are feeling like it's nice to not have a lot of controversy that rises to the level that gets their attention. There's always controversy here, but he's just, you know, things are kind of going along. He hasn't done anything to really rock the boat significantly, and here he is.
The other thing to note, Republicans talk about how they stopped the crazy liberal agenda of Tony Evers, but that crazy liberal agenda included expanding Medicaid, even more money for schools than what they approved, things like medical marijuana, expanding background checks, red flag laws. They're all popular in Marquette polls. So the things that he lost on are winners of the public.
The legislature was at 52%, so
that's
doing
right.
Pretty well also.
Next, we have Lena Taylor, so state lawmaker, from Democrat from Milwaukee, running for mayor. The thing I've heard about Mayor Tom Barrett for a long time has been his probably best challenger, strongest challenger, would be a well-funded African-American candidate who could articulate the challenges of Milwaukee have been addressed, especially things from the black community, like lead laterals, policing issues, incarceration rate. The question I've got is Lena the person? And I'm not sure yet. She's proven it. Fundraising-wise, she's never been a dynamo. She has a deep reservoir of support in her district because just look at the primary she had with Mandela Barnes 2016. She won with, I believe, 60% of the vote in that primary. So she has a core level of supporters. But she's not guaranteed a free shot at Barrett because right now Ashanti Hamilton, the city council president, is kind of in the race, but he's not really committed that much. Tony Zielinski, an alderman, is running. So you have this scenario possibly where could two African-American candidates, and Lena and Ashanti, split the black vote and allow Barrett and Zielinski to get through the primary. That's a wild card. But you have seen a series of Democrats leave the legislature for local office because life minority is not a whole lot of fun. Mm-hmm. And then finally, quickly, we have building permits. The Realtors Association reported out this week that there were 12,500 new single-family building permits issued in 2017 compared to 30,000 in 2014. They say that contributes to this affordable housing shortage we have in Wisconsin. So,
sure it does.
Well, that's Rewind for this week. I'm J.R. Ross.
I'm Scott Bauer.
Stay tuned next week. We have lots of stuff going on on Wisconsin I with committee hearings, especially the final Speaker's Task Force on Suicide Prevention. That's Rewind for September 6th. Happy birthday, Mom.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.